From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week, a special archive edition featuring three Latina artists.
You have to be bold, like she was in everything she did. Otherwise, go to Blancanieves, you know, Snow White, you know.
Actress Salma Hayek on the fearless Frida Kahlo. Then Rosy Perez and musician Julieta Venegas.
You know, I had so much different styles in my house that I would listen to, and they all seemed so natural to me.
Also, it's the perpetual question, ¿quiénes somos? Who are we? It's a question Latinos love to ask.
Hispanic is such a new term that it started off as nobody knew what it meant, and now they know what it means and they like it.
Well, I really don't know why they call us Hispanics.
All this and more coming up on a special archive edition of Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Quédense con nosotros. Stay with us. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Hard to believe it, but Latino USA has been on the air 20 years now. And next week, we'll be back with you in fighting form, because that's when we expand Latino USA from a half-hour show to a full hour every week. But this week, we're wrapping up our trip through the Latino USA archives. First, stories from three iconic Latina artists, Rosy Perez, Julieta Venegas, and we start with Salma Hayek. I sat down with her in 2003 to discuss her movie Frida and what it meant to her to portray one of Latin America's most important artists.
Salma, do you remember the first painting that you saw and the reaction that you had?
I don't know if I saw it before, but I do remember acknowledging it when I was about 14 years old. And I saw the paintings. What? The heck is that? You know, I don't think I like them. But I walked away and I couldn't get the images off my head. They're haunting.
Yeah.
They're haunting. So I went back, I looked at more, I became intrigued. I started asking questions, eventually reading, eventually going to her house in Mexico to the museum, watching the movie that Paul LeDuc did with Ofelia Medina. I just couldn't stay away from it, you know. But also, her story happens in a time that Mexico was such an interesting place, you know. All these people that had very sophisticated minds and that were a threat to their own countries, therefore were expelled from there, would come and find refuge in Mexico. And there was a community of intellectuals and artists from all over the world that wanted to change the world. And it's a wonderful texture that goes behind this beautiful love story. And I did wanted people to see this about my country.
It's interesting because, you know, one of the things I felt when I was watching the movie was, I thought, my gosh, what you're really seeing here is going to change the way the people who come and see this movie think about Mexico and think about Mexican women for sure.
Yes. But it wasn't like a mission. They have to do this. I really wanted to tell this story. Also, as an actor, this is a wonderful experience as an actress because I got to act in a movie that was a personal story. And it was a story I wanted to tell about my people and about the place that I come from. The movie fell apart many times, and I thought maybe it wasn't going to happen. It was a very privileged situation for me that somebody didn't hand me this movie. I had an idea. I wanted to make a certain kind of movie. I wanted to do justice to them. And that's what took 7 years, because I could have done something else before.
There's this wonderful scene where you are making love with a woman, a black woman. And my Mexican self said, híjole, what's going to happen when this shows in Mexico? And I know that you've had some concerns about that.
No. I cannot afford to stop. I cannot afford to make a movie about Frida Kahlo and stop and think, what are they going to think in Mexico? Frida Kahlo was bisexual. She never apologized for it. I don't see why would I apologize for her in a movie. You have to be bold, like she was in everything she did. Otherwise, go to Blancanieves, you know, Snow White, you know.
The thing that got me was seeing really the level of suffering that Frida was exposed to in her life. And the one scene that just I can't get out of my mind is when you are kind of hanging by your hair and you're sitting in this position and she's getting a body cast. I had never, you know, you see her in the body cast in her paintings, but you don't realize what it was like to get a body cast in the 1930s.
It's tormentuous. It's horrible. It's uncomfortable. It's sad because it's very constricting. And all I could think about is this woman that had such passion for freedom, constricted in this cast that made her paralyzed, you know? And it must have been very hard for someone with that kind of a spirit. Like everything in her life, she takes adversity and makes something interesting with it. Not just she's positive about it. No. She turns it around and makes something interesting with it. From her physical pain, she creates art. And from these infidelities, she creates freedom for herself. But he was always the love of his life. That was never a question.
Thanks very much. We've been speaking with Mexican actor Salma Hayek, who produced the film Frida. Thanks so much, Salma. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias, María.
Now, a trip to Brooklyn via Puerto Rico with the actress Rosie Perez, who is one of the proudest Puerto Ricans I've ever met.
Oh, I know where that is. That's in this neighborhood, right?
At Fort Greene Park in Brooklyn, up the street from Spike's joint, where filmmaker Spike Lee sells clothing and memorabilia, Rosie Perez sits on a park bench to talk about growing up not far from here. She remembers living with a big extended family in a low-income area of Brooklyn called Bushwick. That's where she caught the dancing bug that eventually made her famous.
Because they used to go to the disco all the time with the hustle and everything. So they used to use us as their partners and stuff. And they would, like, burn holes in our stockings and in our socks. They would twirl us around so much, like, "Ay, man, I'm tired. Get up. I want to," you know, they wanted to be the king of the disco, you know, stuff. And that's how we started. But
after high school, Rosie moved to Los Angeles to study biochemistry and ended up choreographing for singer Bobby Brown, rapper LL Cool J, and Diana Ross. Her big screen break came in 1989 when Spike Lee cast her as Gloria, who danced like a prize fighter and cursed up a storm as his girlfriend in Do the Right Thing.
That's it, all right?
I have to get my money from Sal. I'll be back, all right?
Shit's to the curb, Mookie, all right? And I'm tired of it, all right? Because you need to step off with your stupid ass self, okay? And you need to get a f***ing life, Mookie, all right? Because the one you got, baby...
After Do the Right Thing, Rosie landed a gig choreographing the Fly Girls on TV's In Living Color, where she brought hip-hop dancing from the New York streets and nightclubs into mainstream America. After stints on TV shows like 21 Jump Street, Rosie's film career took off, playing rather loud characters like she did in the film Night on Earth. To avoid being stereotyped, Rosie says she fought hard to win roles like the Jeopardy game queen in White Man Can't Jump.
Jeopardy is gonna call Billy. It is my destiny that I triumph magnificently on that show.
Who is Peter the Great? Who is the Emperor Constantine?
It's like when people think of Latin women, they think of kind of like just sex-crazed maniacs that are kind of, you know, lightheaded and not really that smart, you know what I mean? And everything, and I hate that. And that's why I went after White Man Can't Jump with a vengeance, because you gotta be smart to get on Jeopardy and win money. And I was like to my agents, I gotta get this role, man, and I gotta keep her Puerto Rican, man. You know, I know they wanted a white girl, an Irish girl from Boston, you know, initially for the role. So, but yo, if I get in there, I gotta represent, man. You gotta keep her Puerto Rican, man. Look at films, look at TV. We're always the maid, or we're always the one that's having the extramarital affair, you know, wearing the tight dress and you know, all that and everything. That's fine, but don't pigeonhole us and don't have that represent us as a whole.
For Latino USA, I'm Mandalit del Barco in New York.
Throughout the history of our show, we've covered a lot of music, and I mean a lot. So we wanted to go back a few years to 2002 when we profiled one of our favorite singer-songwriters. Back then, Julieta Venegas had just released her second album, Buen Invento.
Maquillaje, maquillaje, creo que no necesito. Más temo conocer el color que llevo adentro. Metal, metal, donde algo latía.
Julieta Venegas is a singer-songwriter and a classically trained musician from Mexico City. She got her start with the Mexican punk group Tijuana No, but it's with the release of her second solo album, Buen Invento, where Venegas has been recognized as an up-and-coming artist in the Latin alternative music scene. Julieta Venegas was born in Long Beach, California, but she was raised in the border city of Tijuana, Mexico. She was influenced early on, not only by listening to music on U.S. radio stations from across the border, but also by the Mexican music she heard at home, and by the border experience itself.
Well, I think it influenced the fact, you know, that I have a lot of information that I processed since I was a kid and I started listening to music. But the combination that I listened to was basically, you know, Pedro Infante, Juan Gabriel, Tom Jones, Madness. You know, I had so much different styles in my house that I would listen to, and they all seemed so natural to me that now the music that I do is influenced by so many things. You don't really hear a certain style. I think that, you know, it becomes more rich, the music that you're doing.
Algo mueve en mí.
Venegas began studying classical piano at age 8. As a teenager, she joined local rock bands as a keyboard player. But it wasn't until she became a vocalist by default that she truly discovered what she wanted to do.
When I was around 16, I started playing with bands, just keyboards. And then in one of the bands, we didn't have a vocalist. So it was kind of natural for them to ask me to, I don't know, sing. You know, it was like, well, why don't you try singing? I mean, you're the girl. It looks good. So I started singing, and that's basically when I started writing songs also. I mean, I guess I started singing more out of an interest of writing songs than actually singing. I think it's very good to start being exposed and, you know, exposing Latin music or what's going on in Latin America musically here in the States, because it's more just out of saying this is what's going on, you know. I think that it's good to see the, like, all the richness of styles that are happening, because it's not just rock and español. It's, I mean, that's what they call it here maybe because it's in Spanish, but there's so many different styles. There's, you know, hip-hop, there's hard rock, there's pop, there's everything. And I think it's really interesting to open it up and to see that it's not necessarily something that's being, you know, copying from what Anglo music is about. It's now it's more of a, this is what we are.
Coming up on Latino USA, being Latino, does it bind us or does it drive us apart?
While we have individual past histories, our destinies are tied together as Latinos.
¿Quiénes somos? That's coming up. No se vayan.
Let's be your decided.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. We're winding down this month of special archive shows by revisiting that most persistent of Latino questions. ¿Quiénes somos? Who are we? Are we Latino? Mexican-American? Salvadoran? Dominican? Hispanic? American? This piece, from our very first year on the air, 1993, attempts to tackle that question.
I consider myself a Hispanic. I don't like the term Latino.
When you say Latino, you get, a warmer sense of who people are, just a greater sense, a more comprehensive sense of culture.
What I call myself, I'm Chicano, seventh generation in this country.
I'm Puerto Rican. That's it, period.
I speak Spanish, but I'm not Spanish. I speak English. I'm not English. I'm Latina, I'm Hispanic, I'm Puerto Rican. I'm all of those things. Just don't call me Spic.
It's not the most important issue facing Latinos or Hispanics or Cuban Americans, Puerto Ricans or Mexican Americans, but the questions, what do we call ourselves and why this label rather than the other, surfaces so regularly that it's almost an inside joke among Latinos or Hispanics or whatever. It's also one of the questions studied by a group of political scientists who conducted a study of political behavior called the Latino Political Survey.
The evidence that I see from the Latino National Political Survey and every other survey that I've seen demonstrates, I think, conclusively that most people who we might choose to identify as Latino do not choose that as their first term of identification. If I identify as Puerto Rican, as Mexican American, as Cuban American, and many other ways.
The term Latino is just a useful term in terms of describing the fact that there are all these different groups. The question is, what does it mean politically? That's the significance of the term. I guess the point is, if you put it all together, is that this is a very fluid kind of situation, and it's something that changes over time in the sense that it depends on what kind of movement and context you have and what kind of what the leadership's saying. And it depends also on whether you have any kind of real social movement in place that does something with these kinds of symbols. And right now, what we were falling into was mostly Hispanic being used by kind of a middle class of professionals by default because the term was either being used by the media or, and I know in the Puerto Rican case, there were many Puerto Ricans that were using a term like Hispanic professionals because being Puerto Rican got, you know, identified you as someone on welfare, that kind of thing. So it was a more acceptable kind of term. And those different political reasons that many of us would advance for using these types of terms.
Well, you know, when I think of the term Latino, it brings to mind the diversity that exists within the Latino communities. I consider myself a Chicano, a Mexicano, a Mexican-American, a Latino, a Hispanic, all depending on where I find myself, who I find myself with. I have two cousins who are Mexican-American who are married to non-Mexican-American Latinos. What are their children? Are their children, you know, they're half Guatemalan, half Mexican. Are they going to go around saying, oh, well, I'm half Guatemalan, I'm half Mexican? No, they go around saying, I'm Latino. When you're walking down the street in Los Angeles and an Anglo comes to you, he doesn't say, oh, excuse me, are you Mexican or Salvadorian or Nicaraguan? They see a brown face and they say, you're Mexican. So what's happening while we have individual past histories as a Cuban, as a Puerto Rican, as a Central American, as a Mexican, our destinies are tied together as Latinos.
Over 60% of this country's Latinos, Hispanics, or whatever, are of Mexican descent. And as we hear in this audio essay, in their case, the issue of labels and identity takes on a whole other dimension.
When I was younger, it had to be Chicano movement.
Hispanic is such a new term that it started off as nobody knew what it meant, and now they know what it means and they like it.
Well, I really don't know why they call us Hispanics, because we weren't Hispanics until recently. Mexican-American is fine. Chicana is fine.
The word Hispanic I don't like. I'd rather use the word Indo-Hispanic.
I believe Hispanic is for the people from Spain.
One thing for sure, we'd rather be called Hispanics than Chicano.
And the older generation thought that this was a derogatory term.
Actually, Chicana, it's a slang word. It used to be a slang word for Mexicana.
I don't know why the Mexican America keep changing names.
Chicano, soy Chicano. Cause I'm brown and I'm proud and I'll make it in my own way.
I am not Hispano. I am not Latin American. I am not American or Spanish surname. I am not Mexican American. I am not any of those terms, those vulgar terms that come from Washington and the bureaucrats and the functionaries. And when they try to make sense of us and they make no sense of us, I do not label myself. I am a Chicano.
Chicano has a lot of negative definitions. Chicano, I've been told, is it came from Mexico when they put the Chinese in Mexico in one certain area in Durango, so they call them Chicanos. They tell me Chicano means peon, the lowest class Mexican that there is. They tell me Chicano is a militant activist from the 60s that, you know, was a true radical on the extremist side. So I don't like people keeping themselves at one level when anybody can advance and should not be put into a class and kept there.
So when you have to fill out a form, what do you call yourself?
I call myself Caucasian.
You see, I'm not into that sort of thing, really. Because I decided that I'm no longer Latino. No, I'm a Hispanic. I'm a Hispanic, damn it. And there is a difference. You see, when I was a Latino, my name was Ricardo Salinas. But now that I'm a Hispanic, it's Ricardo Salinas.
I don't see that we have an identity crisis anymore. I think that we've overcome and passed that a long time ago. We know who we are and we're proud of it.
The more time that we spend on trying to identify ourselves, I think the more time it takes away from trying to do something about bettering our lives.
And hopefully that in the future, we won't have to be concerned about what we want to call ourselves.
Fuck Sam, now don't you panic. It's the decade of the Hispanic. Fuck Sam, now don't you panic.
And for this week, that's Latino USA. We're back with you again next week for a whole hour. Let us know what you think about that and tune in for all the news, surprises, and sounds we're all so excited to bring you. In the meantime, join us online, friend us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or join us on Tumblr. Our program is produced by Carolina Gonzalez, AC Valdez, Lita Hartman, Daisy Rosario, Diana Montaño, Brenda Salinas, Michael Simon Johnson, and Michael Jones. Latino USA is produced by The Futuro Media Group in Harlem. Our program was founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm executive producer Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition, bigger and better, of NPR's Latino USA.
Sin hablar. Véndame tu cuerpo y ponme a bailar. ¿Qué no ves? Aquí me tienes a tus pies.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society for all, and the Ford Foundation, dedicated to working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring for the home handyman or building professional. More at lumberliquidators.com. And the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness, on the web at melvilletrust.org. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.